And if we add to that the first temple stood for almost 400 years, we find that for a 1,000-year period, save for a 70-year interval, for fully 1,000 years, Judaism understood its religious existence around a temple. And the sudden absence of a temple demanded a theological explanation as well as a practical adjustment to the new reality. The theological explanation wasn't simple in itself. If God's temple was destroyed by Roman armies, does that not mean that the Roman gods defeated the Jewish God? And that was the mentality of the ancient Roman world. One of the books of Midrash describes how the Roman conqueror of Jerusalem, the Roman general and soon-to-be emperor Titus, actually entered the temple of Jerusalem, banged on the altar, and attacked the Jewish God by saying, "You're a God and I'm a God. Come and do battle with me." And so a Jew seeing the destruction would ask a very serious theological question. We know that some sources, we have a book that was written in an Aramaic dialect known as Syriac by a fellow who calls himself Baruch, understands the destruction of the temple as being a cause for the cessation of life. There is nothing to live for without a temple. Other sources describe groups of Jews entering a state of perpetual mourning. They would assume the life of ascetic abstinence. They would not eat meat. They would not drink wine. They would derive no joy from this world. And rabbinic stories would describe how one sage living at the time, literally in the immediate aftermath of the destruction, his name is Rabbi Joshua, approaches these ascetics and argues with them, claiming that such extreme reactions to the destruction can only lead to an ultimate negation of life itself. The argument, by the way, is very interesting. We're told that the ascetics stopped eating meat and stopped drinking wine, and Joshua asks why. And they say, how can we eat meat when meat is no longer offered up on the temple, as it used to be when there were sacrifices? How can we drink wine when there are no longer wine libations? And Joshua responds by saying, well, if I'm going to follow your logic, let's stop eating bread, because they used to offer up 2 loaves of bread on a regular basis in the temple. Let's stop drinking water, because they used to pour water over the altar. And of course, what Joshua was basically saying, if I use your logic and I take it to its logical extreme, we can't live anymore. That will bring about an ultimate negation of life. His solution, as opposed to theirs, was to establish formal symbols of mourning. You paint your house, you leave one portion unpainted to remind people of the destruction, but to otherwise get on with life. And when you read these stories, you realize that it must have taken quite a bit of guts to stand up and say, we have to get on with life. But that is really the essence of the rabbinic solution and the rabbinic period. We cannot go into this, you know, this constant and ongoing state of defeatism and of negation of life. Rabbinic literature ascribes the efforts to create alternative systems of Jewish religious expression to one sage in particular. And he's a fantastic fellow. As a historian, I often dream that I could create, or have one created for me, a time machine, and I could go back in history and interview this rabbi whose name is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. I am dying to ask him a series of questions, and I'm convinced that if I were to ask him those questions, he would probably smile and say, why are you asking me? You're the historian, right? But not surprisingly, it was Yochanan ben Zakkai who was Joshua's mentor. And it was he that really developed, or it is to him that we ascribe, much of this process of rejuvenation and redefinition of Judaism. A popular rabbinic story describes how during the siege of Jerusalem, Yochanan ben Zakkai realized the city was doomed. And something has to be saved before the city falls. And so he feigns death and he's smuggled out of the city in a coffin, because that was the only way you could leave town, was in a coffin. And he appears before the Roman general conducting the battle. And he prophesizes to the general, you will be the next Caesar. And sure enough, as they are talking, a messenger comes running in, telling the general exactly that. And this general turned Caesar is so overwhelmed that he says, Yochanan, what can I do for you? And Yochanan says, give me a little town off the southern coast of Judea known as Yavne and its wise men. This little town would set up a center of learning that ultimately would become the new focal point of rabbinic and Jewish rabbinic life.